Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to today's conference call here at Siemens AG. At the beginning, we would like to inform you that this conference will be recorded and will be made available as an audio webcast online. With that, I would like to hand over to today's host, Florian Martens, Head of Media Relations and Executive Communications. Mr. Martens, the floor is yours. Thank you very much, and good morning and welcome, dear colleagues, also on our behalf. I hope you had a good start into this year's spring. It is my pleasure to welcome you to our quarterly conference call with our CEO, Roland Busch, and our CFO, Ralf Thomas. Before we get started, as per usual, a few housekeeping and technical remarks. This morning at 7 a.m. CET, we published our Q2 results. The presentation, as well as our management board members, and as well as any other documentation, can be found at siemens.com/press, as per usual. There you will also find the recording of this conference call after the conference call has concluded. Briefly on the rundown, first, Mr. Busch is going to give you an insight on the finished quarter, including some details on the market and business development. Afterwards, Mr. Thomas will elaborate further on the result of Q2 as well as the outlook. Afterwards, both gentlemen will be available for your questions. Our conference call will end at 9 p.m. CET, sharp at the very latest. As per usual, I would like to point out the safe harbor statement, which you will find at the beginning of our quarterly conference call presentation. And with that, I would like to hand over to our CEO, Roland Busch.
Thank you, Florian, and good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to present to you today our strong operational performance, which we've delivered in a very challenging environment. But I'd also like to discuss the difficult decision we've made to completely wind down our industrial business in Russia. And I'll explain why we are sticking to our guidance for the Siemens Group. Because all in all, our growth story is fully intact. We've been very successful with our strategy, which is focused on digitalization and sustainability. But let me begin with the war in Ukraine. This is a turning point in history. The awful events concern me very much, concern us all. We, as a company, have clearly and strongly condemned this war and have been trying, wherever we can, to help people in Ukraine and the war's many refugees. And we've been particularly concerned about the safety and well-being of our 180 Ukrainian colleagues. I'm thinking, for example, of Andrei, of our head of security in Ukraine, who continues to sit tight in Kiev in his basement. While bombs were falling, he and many others worked to get our people, their children and their families to safety and to organize convoys to the western border. For this reason, we owe Andrei and his team our deepest gratitude. We are also working to facilitate the refugees' arrival in the West. We are organizing accommodation, work and kindergarten places. For example, we've converted one of our buildings in Warsaw into a shelter for 150 people. From the very beginning, we've provided financial support for the work of aid organizations. At the start of the attack on Ukraine, we donated 2 million via our Siemens Caring Hands organization. We've provided a total of 14 million euros so far, in addition to immediate disaster relief. The company has matched the more than 4.5 million in donations from Siemens employees and provided contributions in kind for technical solutions. These efforts have been accompanied by many private initiatives which are providing accommodation, for example. Unfortunately, this isn't the time to give a more detailed report, but I'd just like to say this. I'm very grateful for what's being done and achieved here, and it shows once again the incredible sense of solidarity at Siemens. We're all moved by the war as human beings, and financial figures must take a back seat in the face of the tragedy. Nevertheless, like many other companies, we are feeling the impact on our business. We've around 3,000 colleagues in Russia. Before the war, our operations in the country accounted for roughly 1% of Siemens AG's total revenue. Mobility had the largest local footprint with various long-term projects and related service business. Digital Industries and Smart Infrastructure, on the other hand, focused on sales and local services. After the war started, Siemens put on hold all new business in Russia, as well as all deliveries to Russia. The comprehensive international sanctions, as well as current and potential additional countermeasures, are significantly impacting our business activities in Russia, particularly, above all, mobility's rail service and maintenance business. After thoroughly assessing the entire situation, Siemens has decided to completely wind down its industrial business on the Russian market. Despite our clear stance on the war, this was not an easy decision for us to make. After all, we've been active in Russia for 170 years. We've close customer relationships there. We also have a responsibility to our 3,000 people in the country. And, I'd like to make this clear, we'll continue to support these colleagues to the best of our ability even after this decision. The decision is already being implemented. We've started winding down our remaining operations and all our industrial business activities. This move doesn't apply to the business activities of Siemens Healthineers, which are focused on healthcare. Siemens Financial Services' leasing business in Russia accounts for about 3% of its total portfolio, and at the end of February, SFS has also put all new business on hold and is currently honoring only existing contracts. We're evaluating all options here in line with regulatory requirements. In the second quarter, the impact on net income amounted to around 600 million, due mostly to non-cash accounting impairments, write-offs, and charges. The largest impact was recorded in mobility. Rolf Thomas will give you more details in a moment. From today's perspective, we foresee further potential risk for net income in the low to mid triple-digit million range, although we can't define an exact time frame. Potential effects are mostly non-cash charges related, for example, to the wind-down of legal entities, the valuation of assets at SFS, and restructuring measures. It's difficult to predict the timing since the wind-down of legal entities also depends on factors beyond our control, not least local regulations that can quickly change. Exiting the Russian market has significant consequences. That's why I'd like to stress all the more that we are confirming the guidance for the Siemens Group we announced at the start of fiscal 2022. We can confirm this guidance because we've delivered a strong operational performance in the first half of our fiscal year. Combined with positive portfolio effects, we can generally weather the one-time impact from exiting the Russian market. The positive effects I've mentioned include, for example, the divestment of Siemens Logistics, mail and parcel business, which we're now set to close in the second half of this fiscal year. Ralph will tell you more about this later on. Looking at the highlights of our core business in the second quarter, I can say that I'm very happy, very satisfied with how we are driving our strategic initiatives, with a clear aim of strengthening our digital and sustainable business and simplifying our portfolio further. Siemens is achieving profitable growth despite turbulent times. Our customers are continuing to invest massively in their digital transformation and in energy and resource efficiency, particularly in the wake of rapidly increasing energy and materials prices. In addition, our automation and software solutions are becoming even more relevant due to tight labor markets and increasing complexity in manufacturing, energy grids, and infrastructure. All these factors supported our order growth of 22% on a comparable basis. Our strong momentum here continues across most verticals. There's still a certain amount of pre-ordering due to longer lead times. Overall, revenue grow a strong 9% on a comparable basis, excluding the effects related to Russia. I'm particularly proud of the result at our digital industries automation business. With a revenue growth of 16% on a comparable basis, we're continuing to gain market share here. This result is also evidence of our team's agile and successful supply chain management. We are also extremely proud of Siemens' consistently very strong free cash flow. At 1.3 billion, we've delivered in this regard once again. Together with the proceeds from our divestments, we are strengthening our balance sheet further and creating scope for accelerating our share buyback program and further deleveraging. However, the macroeconomic environment remains very volatile. The war is amplifying cost inflation and constraints on supply chains. The situation remains very dynamic. During the second quarter, the pandemic partially impacted productivity in the US and Europe. However, recent Omicron outbreaks and the lockdowns in Shanghai and Shenzhen, among other cities, pose a risk for the third quarter. Non-delivery of goods from Shanghai is having a knock-on effect across China and the rest of the world. There are disruptions in supply chains and logistics. We are supporting our people in the affected areas by providing food and other necessities to ensure their health and safety. Our factories in Shanghai are working either in closed-loop production or are in the process of being ramped up. However, the situation is changing every day, and we don't expect production in to fully recover in the third quarter. We continue to work relentlessly with our network of suppliers and in our own factories to master these challenges. We want to keep the impact on our customers to a minimum, and we'll continue to balance cost inflation with appropriate price increases. Overall, we delivered a strong operational performance with continuing growth momentum. Orders reached an impressive level of 21 billion, up organically by 22%. And as a result, our order backlog hit a record high of 94 billion euros. In addition, again, our book-to-bill ratio of 1.23 was excellent. Revenue grew 7% to 17 billion. Siemens Healthineers led this development with a 16% increase. Digital industries and smart infrastructure posted high single-digit percentage growth. At mobility, we saw a reduction due to the situation in Russia. The main contributions in this growth came from Germany, up 10%, and the United States, which posted 17% growth. China was unchanged. The prior year quarter was extraordinarily strong in this region. Excluding the Russia-related burden of 360 basis points, operational profitability at the industrial business was a strong 14.6%. Earnings per share before purchase price allocation, EPS per pre-PPA, came in at 1.50. Excluding the impact from Russia, the figure would have been 0.71 higher. We benefited in the previous year from the divestment of Flender. And as I mentioned before, we are seeing strong secular growth trends in all our businesses. Our addressable markets now have a total volume of 465 billion euros, complemented by an additional 130 billion in the adjacent markets of digitalization and IoT. We are now rigorously assessing the various short and long-term effects on medium-term market growth. We are still convinced that digitalization, automation, decarbonization, resource efficiency, and the related investment and stimulus measures will very clearly continue to be the drivers of growth. A real source of our strength and resilience is our record order backlog of 94 billion euros. That's more than 20 billion above the figure for the prior year quarter. This means that the largest share of our revenue for the second half year is already on our books. Now, the priority now is to realize these orders as revenue through stringent execution and continued supply chain excellence. It is helpful that we have high visibility regarding our revenue development due to the order backlog in our short-cycle product businesses at Digital Industries and Smart Infrastructure, supported by a high level of advance reservation payments. In certain areas, substantial orders on hand extend into the first half of fiscal 2023. And at Mobility, we have a project and service backlog that promises us attractive gross margins. A key lever for further value creation is our goal to grow our digital business by about 10% a year until 2025. Here, we are fully on track. Our revenue in the first half year exceeded 3 billion euros. Digital Industries is accelerating the transition to software as a service, SaaS. We are also experiencing rapid growth at Mendix and Supply Frame. We are on the right course and continuing to work intensively to implement our ambitious growth targets. To achieve this goal, we've now taken further organizational steps. In January, Smart Infrastructure set up a dedicated software team comprising around 2,500 software and technology experts who are collaborating in this to make power grids smarter and more efficient. Their aim, to be the leading software provider for digital power grids. The team launched the first comprehensive grid software suite a week ago. Now, in a similar move, we bundled all of Mobility's software businesses, Hacon, Skills, and Bytemark, into one unit. The aim is to offer users a seamless, comprehensive solution for railways, buses, and rental vehicles that will also accelerate profitable growth for us, too. At Digital Industries, the transition to software as a service in our product lifecycle management business is strategically crucial. As the Q2 figures show, we've succeeded in transforming the business even faster than planned. Our annual recurring revenue, so-called ARR, increased 13% compared to the prior year quarter to 3.1 billion euros and thus exceeded our medium-term target of 10% annual growth. In this quarter alone, the key indicator ARR in the cloud business grew 3 percentage points to 9% overall. Our sales team is very active and customers' feedback has been very positive. Many contract renewals in this PLM business have adopted the new model. The flip rate is now 44%, more than expected. They account for almost 70% of the total contract volume. But the flip side of this success is that the transition translated as expected into lower revenue and profitability in the previous quarter. Overall, around 1,250 customers have signed on to our SaaS business model in the first half of the fiscal year. In Q2 alone, around 50% of those customers were small and medium-sized companies, which include many new customers. We are very pleased by this development since our ambition is ultimately to expand our customer base with the new business model. And Q2 was the strongest quarter to date for software renewals in the PLM portfolio, and our plan is to continue serving our customers' appetite for software as a service. With our technology and domain know-how, we are helping our customers transform their businesses and drive sustainability. Highlights in Q2 include software for trucks, power grid management systems, and high-speed locomotives. Sustainable food production provides a particularly good example of how we are combining the real and the digital worlds. Some companies have now made it their aim to cultivate food on the seafloor in the future. To make this idea economically feasible, we've developed a complete digital twin for underwater farms. In Imo's garden on the Italian Riviera, plants are growing completely self-sufficiently at a depth of several meters. With our digital technologies, we're helping ensure that the underwater greenhouses anchored there are constructed and operated efficiently. Decarbonization, resource efficiency, and sustainability, these are decisive trends that would also create momentum for our business, and we are continuing to rigorously execute on degree our sustainability framework. I'd like to highlight two initiatives. In fiscal 2021, the share of renewable energies in our energy mix stood at 78%, and we are going to increase this ratio further. In Germany, we've concluded an agreement to purchase solar power for a further 10 years. The war in Ukraine is also being fought on the internet. There, too, attacks are taking place, making it even clearer to everyone how vital cybersecurity is. It's a must-have for all companies and public authorities and also a business opportunity. We've expanded our offering for our customers with, for example, a cybersecurity center for critical infrastructure in Canada, primarily for utility customers. In the long run, no company can counter this growing threat on its own. That's why I'm very pleased that the Digital Trust Forum, to which organizations like the Federation of German Industry and Platform Industry 4.0 belong, is merging with the Charter of Trust launched by Siemens. This cybersecurity initiative now has 17 members, including Bosch and Deutsche Post. At Siemens, we've more than 1,300 cybersecurity experts operating at 5 global hubs, and these experts are working harder than ever to protect our customers and Siemens against cyber attacks. And now I hand over to Ralf, who's going to give you more financial news.
All right, thank you very much, Roland, and also good morning from my side, ladies and gentlemen. Now, allow me to begin, as always, by referring you to our earnings release, where you will find the results for all our businesses, including the Siemens Healthineers numbers, which have already been announced. And with that, we will turn directly to a detailed overview of our performance in a very eventful second quarter. We will begin with the results for Digital Industries. Our key markets, such as the automotive industry, machine building, or electronics industries, continue to show strong underlying growth momentum, albeit with some signs of a certain normalization. Still, a considerable portion of the excellent order growth in our short-cycle factory automation and motion control businesses was influenced by our customers' expectations that delivery times would be prolonged. The remarkable book-to-bill ratio of 1.3 has now boosted DI's order backlog to more than 11.5 billion euros. All automation businesses showed a massive order growth, up by 38% in total. Orders in the software business were up by a percentage in the mid-teens without closing large deals during the second quarter. We are very pleased by the growth in revenue at our automation businesses. Since the ongoing supply chain constraints were mitigated extremely well again in the second quarter, we achieved record production output and a 16% increase in revenue. Even though we remained in a position to mitigate supply chain shortages step by step, we currently expect the situation to remain critical beyond fiscal 2022, also depending on how the COVID-19 situation develops in China. Now, revenue in discrete automation was up 20%. Process automation continued its recovery and achieved 7% revenue growth. As Roland Busch has already explained, revenue in the software business was down 11%. This decline was due in part to the momentum of our accelerated transition to software as a service in the PLM segment, and in part to the absence of larger contracts in the lumpy electronic design automation, or EDA, business. While PLM was moderately lower by 4%, the EDA business showed a decrease by a percentage in the mid-20s compared to the strong prior year quarter. However, we are pleased that Mendix, on the other hand, continued its substantial growth path well above 30%. Digital Industries' profit margin was at 18.1% lower than we had originally expected. And this is mainly due to the accelerated SaaS transition, which had 100 basis points of additional negative impact, higher incentive accruals due to the continued order strength, and a non-cash write-down of current assets in Russia further burdened profitability by a total of around 80 basis points. Now, in addition, our important and ongoing investments in cloud technology accounted at €61 million for around 130 basis points of negative impact on Digital Industries' margin level in the second quarter and will, as previously announced, gradually increase further throughout fiscal 2022. We are, however, extremely pleased that Digital Industries achieved a stellar free cash flow of more than €1 billion. Higher advance payments made it possible to pre-finance the higher inventories needed in the automation business to stabilize the supply chain. Thanks to excellent management of payment terms, the team also successfully reduced liabilities. In addition, the software business made a considerable contribution to the success in the second quarter with its strong cash cycle, as typical for the season. Now, looking at our key vertical end markets for the next quarters, we expect continuing positive momentum based on sound investment sentiment and strong fundamentals in most of our key industries. We expect the automotive industry to see increasing normalization on a high level. However, it is likely that our customers in many industries will continue to be restricted by constraints in their supply chain. Now, let me give you the regional perspective on the dynamic growth in orders and revenue in Digital Industries automation business. All regions showed double-digit order growth, with Europe and China leading the way. In China, we grew rapidly by 27%, while orders in Germany and Italy even soared by 37%. That being said, however, we expect further normalization on demand going forward and a gradual reduction of the order backlog. Now, the revenue growth in the automation businesses was broad-based with a strong increase of 25% in China. In Germany, up by 8%, growth was mainly driven by the motion control business. Italy showed 23% revenue growth overall on strength in discrete automation in particular. In the United States, process automation saw a double-digit increase. Although the order backlog is at record level, providing a qualified outlook for the third quarter is a very demanding task. This outlook largely depends on global component availability as well as on the length and impact of lockdowns in Shanghai and other regions in China. Manufacturing at our most important factories for Digital Industries in Nanjing and Chengdu is running. However, their manufacturing output and ability to deliver are increasingly being burdened by disruptions in local supply chains and by the availability of components from suppliers based in and around Shanghai, as well as by the general logistical constraints being experienced nearly everywhere. Now, under the assumption that the economic activities and, above all, the factories in Shanghai can be ramped back up during the course of May, and that there is no material deterioration in the situation in other regions in China, comparable revenue growth at Digital Industries will be at around 10% in Q3. This growth will be supported by, among other things, a positive contribution from the software business, where we expect larger contracts in the EDA business to more than offset continuing SaaS transition effects in the PLM business. We expect the profit margin for DI's third quarter to be at around 20%. The quality of this result will, as I said, be highly dependent on the developments in China and on the speed of the SaaS migration. Let's now move on to smart infrastructure. The ESI team delivered strong growth in orders and revenue in favorable end markets. Margins were up despite being held back by headwinds from the COVID-19 pandemic and despite the sanctions imposed on Russia. In total, orders were up by 22%, driven most notably by more than 30% growth in the electrical product business, which benefited from ongoing industrial demand. In addition, the electrification business grew by more than 20% due to larger order wins for data centers, such as an order from a world-leading social media company and due to strong demand from the semiconductor industry. The buildings business was up around 15% on continuing strength in the product business and on accelerating solutions and services activities. Revenue grew by 8% in total, with the largest contribution coming from the electrical products business, up by 15%. The SI team again succeeded in mitigating major constraints in the supply chain and in keeping factory utilization on a high level. The profit margin of 11.1% was up 30 basis points year over year, benefiting from higher capacity utilization as well as cost savings from rigorous implementation of our competitiveness program, which is fully on track. Headwinds from rising commodity prices as well as from component and logistics cost inflation were, to a large degree, mitigated by pricing actions. However, this effect was partially burdened by the consequences of the pandemic. In particular, the solutions and service business was negatively impacted by the pandemic. And here, too, we felt initial effects from the lockdown in Shanghai, where two factories were temporarily closed at times in March. Around 40 basis points of negative impact was recorded from write-downs and impairments on assets in Russia. Another aspect that we are very pleased with, Smart Infrastructure made further progress in optimizing its portfolio. For instance, an agreement was reached on the sale of the Austrian company Siemens Gebäude Management and Services GmbH, or SGS for short. This transaction is expected to close in the course of the third quarter, subject to regulatory approval. Now, SI's free cash flow was solid overall, although, given tight supply chains, a conscious decision was made to accept higher inventories in order to secure production capabilities further. Looking at regional top-line development, we saw strong broad-based order momentum. All major regions were up, led by the United States, with a remarkable 39% increase. Revenue increased in all regions except China. There was impressive 10% revenue growth in the United States, and the service business delivered 7% revenue growth, led by clear increases in Europe and the Americas. As with digital industries, we also want to give you an overview for smart infrastructure that shows the market trends and the most important vertical and markets. We do see some moderation in commercial buildings due to the knock-on effects from the war in Ukraine. Other important verticals, such as power distribution, electronics, healthcare, and data centers, show healthy and sustainable growth. Now, based on this situation, we expect to see a comparable revenue growth rate in the third quarter that is in line with our guidance for the full fiscal year. We do anticipate that the third quarter profit margin will be at the upper end of the full year guidance range of 12 to 13%, including a positive effect in the mid-double-digit millions from the divestment of SGS. These expectations are based on the assumption that, on the one hand, the lockdown situation in Shanghai will ease during May, and on the other hand, the situation with supply chain frictions and with the cost inflation that is partly related to these frictions will not deteriorate further. Now, for Q3, we expect a slightly negative impact from the relationship between cost inflation versus our own price increases. However, we then expect to see improvement here in the fourth quarter of fiscal 2022. Now, as Roland Busch already mentioned, Mobility's financials in the second quarter were massively affected by sanctions imposed on Russia, while the underlying operational performance was nevertheless quite solid. Orders grew 13% to 2.5 billion euros. Now, this increase was primarily driven by a higher volume from large orders, mainly in the rolling stock business, including an order of 50 Vectron locomotives for Czech Railway. We also booked an order for 18 additional subway trains for the so-called second option for Munich. The rail infrastructure business was up by an amount in the mid-single digits. As of March 31st, the order backlog stood at 36 billion euro with consistently healthy gross margins, and this figure was impacted by order cancellation amounting to about 4 billion euros, which arose in connection with the winding down of our industrial business activities in Russia. We are pleased that our sales funnel also continues to look very promising in the quarters ahead. Now, revenue declined by 9% in Q2. As a result of the sanctions imposed on Russia, revenue recognized in prior periods had to be reduced by more than 200 million euros. Now, if we excluded this effect of around 10 percentage points along with the revenue not recognized for work already performed in Q2, mobility would show moderate growth as well. As a result of the sanctions imposed on Russia, mobility's profit, however, was burdened with impairments, write-downs, and other charges in total of 567 million euros. Now, this amount equals around minus 25.7 percentage points of profitability impact. Meanwhile, the operational business beyond these Russia effects achieved a solid 8.4% profit margin, still impacted by lower productivity due to the pandemic and supply chain frictions. Now, since the write-downs and charges from Russia were mostly non-cash relevant, they only had minor impact on free cash flow in Q2. Mobility, therefore, delivered a solid cash performance of 140 million euros. For the second half of the fiscal year, we expect continuously positive contributions to free cash flow from mobility. Yet non-receipt of payments from Russian customers will lead to a cash conversion rate clearly below 1 for the full fiscal year. For Q3, we assume revenue growth will be in the low to mid-single digits because it will still be affected by non-receipt of revenue from Russian projects. We expect the third quarter profit margin to be around 7%. Non-receipt of contributions from Russia-related projects, as well as strained material supply and logistic constraints, will continue to have a negative impact on profit. Ladies and gentlemen, I will keep the perspective on our results below the industrial businesses crisp. In the appendix on page 28 of the presentation, you will find the full earnings bridge with all details. Here, I would just like to say this. Siemens Financial Services showed a robust performance strongly influenced by charges of 57 million euros related to the sanctions imposed on Russia. The business with equity investments made a very positive contribution to the results in the second quarter. Now, our goal within the portfolio companies to be sustainable in our value creation is something we still very successfully are pursuing. This success was impressively demonstrated in Q2 by a 292 million euro revaluation gain in connection with the announced divestment of Siemens' stake in the Valeo Siemens e-automotive joint venture. On top of that, all fully consolidated units improved their earnings. A higher loss from our at-equity Siemens Energy investment has once again been a very unsatisfactory development for us. The item financing, eliminations, and other items included a positive, but unfortunately only temporary net effect that amounted to 177 million euros in connection with corporate treasury hedging activities related to the Russian ruble. This effect was partially offset by, among other things, a revaluation loss of 119 million euros on our stake in ThoughtWorks. The tax rate of 31% was temporarily higher in the second quarter due to non-tax deductible items related to Russia. Let's now turn to our excellent cash flow. Our performance in Q2 very impressively highlights our ability to deliver strong and consistent free cash flow throughout the year thanks to stringent working capital management. We are confident that we will be able to continue on this path despite the existing supply chain constraints. I already now want to point out that the upcoming proceeds from the sale of the mail and parcel business of Siemens Logistics and the sale of Unix traffic will not be recognized in our free cash flow. In Q2, net income was burdened to a considerable extent by effects related to Russia. This impact was also reflected into other important parameters from the Siemens financial framework. First, the return on capital employed, the ROCE, excluding variant-related M&A effects of 11.1% was outside the target corridor. This result was due to the Russia effect already mentioned, which had a negative impact of 460 basis points on ROCE in the second quarter. Now, for the full fiscal year, we expect a clear improvement in this key performance indicator. Secondly, at 1.6, the ratio of industrial net debt to earnings before tax, interest, taxes, depreciation, amortization was slightly above our maximum target, and with strong operational free cash flow and substantial proceeds from the sale of Unix traffic and with mail and parcel business of Siemens Logistics in the second half of the year, we will continue deleveraging our business and further reduce our debt levels. Now, as Roland Busch highlighted, we will clearly accelerate our existing share buyback program and will literally do so as of tomorrow. The pension deficit was, as of March 31st, reduced to further historic lows of 2.2 billion euros. However, we do expect the actuarial assessment at fiscal year end to reflect the effects from inflation in the opposite direction. Let me now summarize some key items and expectations that underpin our outlook for fiscal 2022 based on our results for the first half year. Now, on this slide, you can see the increasingly tangible effects from our strategy for optimizing our portfolio in fiscal 2022. In total, we expect roughly 2.1 to 2.3 billion euros in gains at the net income level from these four larger transactions. The exact amount would obviously be depending on final closing of the transactions. The sale of the mail and parcel business of Siemens Logistics and the sale of Unix Traffic are both now expected to close in the second half of fiscal 2022. In both cases, the exact timing will, of course, be subject to the relevant regulatory approvals, which are still pending. Now, this slide gives you an updated overview of all line items below industrial businesses and gives you a corresponding expectations for fiscal 2022. I would like to point out a few topics. From today's perspective, despite the Russia-related charges in Q2, we expect SFS's operational results in fiscal 2022 should be in the lower part of the range of a 15 to 20% return on equity. At this point, however, we cannot exclude the possibility of further negative effects of the planned winding down of SFS's leasing business in Russia within the framework of the regulatory requirements. Nevertheless, it is too early for a reliable and qualified assessment. For the portfolio companies, we expect a positive result of around 1.4 to 1.6 billion euros. And this result, of course, is an impressive proof point showing that our strategy of creating long-term value at the portfolio companies is being executed successfully. For the remaining fully consolidated units, we continue to constantly improve the margins and examine all strategic options. For our at-equity Siemens Energy investment, we anticipate, based on Siemens Energy's expectations, a limited improvement of our net income participation compared to the prior year. We are by no means satisfied with the current performance. Siemens Energy's share price has been very volatile recently, and we do hope to gain a clear perspective and more certainty for our planning from the upcoming Siemens Energy Capital Market Day on May 24th. As you are already aware of, we continue to expect the relevant charges from the purchase price allocation at Siemens Energy for Siemens Energy AG to amount to nearly 100 million euros in fiscal 2022. Now, within the amortization of intangible assets acquired in business combinations, which is the so-called PPA, the purchase price allocation, we now expect around 950 million euros due to the final assessment of the Varian transaction. For the financing, eliminations, and other items, we assume a negative contribution of around 300 million euros for fiscal 2022. We do continue to expect the tax rate to be in the range of 25 to 29%, and as always, this expectation does not include impact from any potential tax reforms. And this, ladies and gentlemen, brings us to the outlook. We confirm our financial targets for fiscal 2022 for the Siemens Group, which are based on continuing growth in global GDP and our expectation that the challenges to our businesses from COVID-19 and the supply chain constraints will not worsen in the remainder of the fiscal year 2022. Under these conditions, we expect our industrial business to continue its profitable growth. For the Siemens Group, we expect 6 to 8% growth on a comparable revenue and a book-to-bill ratio above 1. Digital Industries expects for fiscal 2022 to achieve comparable revenue growth of 9 to 12% and a profit margin of 19 to 21%, including an expected reduction of up to 2 percentage points from the fast ramp up of our strategic transition to software as a service in part of its large software business. Smart Infrastructure expects for fiscal 2022 comparable revenue growth of 6 to 9%, and the profit margin is expected to be between 12 to 13%. Mobility, which previously expected fiscal 2022 comparable revenue growth of 5 to 8%, now expects revenue on prior year levels. The profit margin is expected to be between 10 to 10.5%, and with the expected gain from the sale of Unix Traffic being sufficient to balance impacts related to the sanctions imposed on Russia. We do continue to expect the profitable growth of our industrial business to achieve an increase in basic EPS from net income before purchase price allocation, accounting to a range of 8.7 euros to 9.10 euros, up from 8 euros and 32 cents in fiscal 2021. Net income is in fiscal 2021 included a positive contribution from divestments and other portfolio-related gains totaling 1.5 billion euros. We assume a similar positive contribution in fiscal 2022 from portfolio-related results, net of burdens related to Russia. Now, portfolio-related results include the sales of Unix Traffic, the mail and parcel handling business of Siemens Logistics, and our stake in Valeo Siemens E Automotive. As always, this outlook excludes burdens from legal and regulatory matters. Thank you very much for your attention, and now back to Florian Martens. Looking forward to your questions.
Thank you very much, Roland Busch. And now I would like to say we have to separate the German and English channels. We are now going to start asking or receiving the questions in German. So if you have a question you want to ask in English, then please do it in the English room. And this means I can now hand over to the operator to explain the proceedings and receiving your questions. Thank you very much, Mr. Martens. Now, if you want to ask a question, please press the button followed by number one on your phone and do this one after the other. The operator is going to register for the Q&A session. Now, the first question. Axel Höppner, Handelsblatt, your line is open now. Good morning. Just a follow-up question on Russia. Well, you see, I understand there are no spare parts, so this is a reason, or there are moral or political reasons. Now, is something going to, is somebody else now maintaining these trains? Someone in Russia, maybe? And then the second strategic question, you know, the capital markets always take into account, but what about, you know, share buybacks or strategy programs? Does that affect the investors, or what do they think? Or what about shipments and deliveries? Well, thank you very much. Good morning, Mr. Höppner. First, about Russia. I can say that this is the consistent implementation of the sanctions which we see. We said that we are not or have not delivered parts to this country. We stopped this right away, had a look at the situation, so the pipeline. So the pipeline for this division is now expiring. Now it is all about reducing things excessively. Surely we have to think of those working there. Talking about service, I should say that the service package number one, well, that, you know, things were dealt with. Then the package two, lubricants were involved here. So we are, believe, we implemented everything consistently. We did so respectfully. We warned our customers several weeks ahead of doing this, and then we started joint venture. And here we are producing trains in Russia. Now, this means that Siemens locomotives without drives, without brakes, are not being produced. So I believe it is just consistent when we implement this. Closing down operational units in under local law, it's not so easy. We just want to do it in an orderly manner, and you know, it takes time to do everything properly. Surely highest priority is given to our associates and members of staff working in Russia. We want to treat them properly so that they do not face any dangerous situations, and surely to accelerate buybacks or repurchase, this might be on the table, but it is also about the performance, you know, growth. You can see that we did a great job there. We can do a lot of things that others cannot do. Then automation, 16% growth. We gained market share. This means we are really using the strengths of our portfolio in order to increase this. And this, of course, should be reflected in profitability in order to convince the capital market. You know, an accelerated repurchase, looking at the current valuation, I think this is not necessarily the absolute, it's not absolutely attractive. Next question, Alexander Hübner, Reuters. Line is open. Well, good morning. I must say that my question also relates to sanctions. Well, you talked about this already. Mr. Thomas, Siemens Energy. You know, from quarter to quarter, we hear that things are more urgent and increasingly dissatisfied. You're on the supervisory board. Now, what do you think will or should happen? But, you know, how can we exert pressure on Siemens Energy so that they are moving in the right direction? Looking at the portfolio of companies, you also said that in operative terms, everything seems to be working quite well. But, you know, there are some large drives, you know, and there were some appeals to you, meaning you should rethink, either say it is not possible to sell these things in a sensible or reasonable manner. Now, is there a change of the mindset, a change of thinking, you know, rethinking? Now, could you... Now, is someone saying, okay, we might think about it and, you know, keep it in the long run, you know? Well, Mr. Hübner, thank you very much for this question. Two interesting questions. Siemens Energy first. You pointed out to the various situations. And, you know, we said we are not happy or dissatisfied, then we are surely not the only shareholders who have... you know, this impression or this dissatisfaction. So what should happen? Management of Siemens Energy, and I'm sure they are asking the same questions. Like you, we are very much keen on getting to know what did the managed team around Mr. Buch is going to do. You know, they're organizing capital days. They want to do that in order to make progress into the future. I'm sure there are some exerting pressure, and there are others. Jochen Eichhorn, for instance, extremely successful restructuring expert, moved to the management side, Gamesa. Mr. Stokowski also, and you know him from the history of these companies. These two gentlemen really know what they are doing, but, you know, they can do only what is, say, realistic or possible. They have to develop a kind of opinion, finding out what is possible, and then implement this. Portfolio companies. Surely, I'm happy about your praise. Things are really working well, as you say. But, you know, we create a special framework conditions. I do not really want to repeat everything, but why do we have these portfolio companies? Not because other things are not attractive. Successful business, but, you know, when looking at the industrial structure, the way they are working the markets, the technologies they are going to use there, and sometimes, you know, it has to do with the question how to manage business, you know, medium-sized companies, respective competitors. Now, all this, in a nutshell, made us, you know, rethink, treat these companies in a different way, give them, say, entrepreneurial latitude and freedom. And surely the better operating results prove us right. And, of course, there's always an impact, logistic change, inflation, Russia, et cetera, everything's, all the things that are being described in the media, they also attach or affect us. Yes, sure. But when looking at the steps which we've taken, then, you know, also the Bailey and the parcel business, you know, we think that we have really attractive, say, success stories, and they might turn into this. We do not see a reason why any fundamental reasonings have to be questions. You know, it's always a question of timing. There are so many challenges which we have to face at the same time. So we have to ask ourselves what is the best thing to do right now. But, you know, the basic orientation in this respect certainly is that, you know, the various best possible orientation towards the future, sufficient resources, and then take the time that he can implement all this and prove this. And on the way to this destination, you continue thinking what is the best area for this or that business. You know, also our members of staff, and we always think that we are doing the right thing, and this is being confirmed by others. Thank you. Next question, Riska Hohmeyer from DPA. Line is open. Good morning. Two questions. Large drives. I would like to know, you know, I think maybe I need a bit more expertise. I say, selling, no doubt about this, but maybe it takes a bit longer. Am I seeing it correctly or am I wrong? And another question, what about Russia? When looking at the situation, mobility goes down, the others go up. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Riermeier, for your question. I do not know whether you are in a forest and cannot see things properly, but LDA, you know, it is like I said, and how we communicated it over the last two, three years. It is not about, you know, a timeline for a divestment and, you know, discuss things very early on or very intensely. It's all about giving businesses a platform so that they can develop. The LDA management was extremely successful over the last 2 years. Their business operations were very good. They are on the right track. The general conditions, which I mentioned in my presentation, do not affect LDA, but the entire, say, industries, the economy in the world. Here we've got major challenges, which we see in the world markets these days. You know, I can say that we hope that this situation will be an exception in the future, and then, of course, inflation, and then all the anxieties which you can find. These are ingredients, you know, which make you, say, act cautiously, and now using the forest. You know, if there's mist or fog in the forest, then, of course, you're always thinking very carefully about the next steps you want to take. Very important. You know, we don't think that there's any pressure exerted on us, neither in time nor in terms of, say, technologies. Of course, we want to do the business with the best future perspective. Well, sometimes the performance is say, weak, but, you know, we work on this and then we will see. Mobility, yes, I can comment on this. Surely we see the biggest influence comes from this Russia effect. And, you know, looking at the profit margins and other effects, I should say, we are going to grow and see a profitability of several percent. Surely, it's not only about rolling stock, but it is also about the infrastructure. Here we talk about key components, which we do not get, and which we might have to buy very expensively. And COVID, of course, you know, looking, for instance, Sacramento, United States, or in Krefeld, and we've got many Omicron cases, which means people are working at the shop floor and then they have to be in quarantine. We just want to make sure that everything will be all right over the next few months. But nevertheless, I should say the performance is quite good. And if you look right or left benchmarks, I think we are still well on track. Maybe I didn't word my question precisely enough. You know, looking at the previous quarters, new quarter, new forecast increased, but this time just a confirmation. And the question now is, why is it only a confirmation? You know, Russia, mobility, surely, and would you have confirmed the forecast only even without the influence of Russia? Well, we are always, you know, using subjunctives in this case. We just want to talk about the things that really go well. and, you know, to be honest, confirming the forecast under general conditions these days, I believe that this is positive news. This applies to competitors and companies in other industries as well. At present, we face a situation that we have to deliver and do deliver a very high level of transparency. And I think we worded it very clearly. What is the business we expect? CISE, mobility. And, you know, here you see the impact of the Russia situation. And surely we've introduced and implemented portfolio measures early on and successfully so. And, you know, then we've got the 472 million effect, you know, after tax, second quarter due to Russia. Now we try to compensate all this without adjusting our forecast. And then there is the case that all these challenges, despite all these challenges, the company should be in a position to offer very good cash performance and do so. I believe this is an important and essential point that a company can do that. And we are very proud that we really have got a powerful team everywhere in the world, not losing focus on activities or operations and also paying attention to humanitarian aspects and, you know, get involved, so to speak. Michael Flemich from Börsen-Zeitung, the line is open. Good morning, Mr. Flemich, Börsen-Zeitung. Three questions. China, economy, administrative costs. Mr. Busch, you described geopolitical situation and how it can influence the Siemens business. Now, what are your consequences from the Russian business when looking at China? Structural changes, do you think they will be necessary or might be necessary because you might face a similar situation, similar sanctions? Second question about the business cycle. Mr. Thomas, you said you see the first signs of a certain degree of normalization of the growth dynamism, but this is not directly perceivable now. Now, where do you see these signs? And then the cost, administrative costs, they have risen by 20% over 6 months, but also in the quarter. Could you give us more information here? Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Flemich. Let me start with China. First, if you compare Russia and China, you see, I can say that most DAX companies say that we have sown so many, say, sales or turnover in Russia, and then say one, then they look at China and then they say the same, you know, the same thing. Here they are talking about different orders of magnitude. One there for Russia and say 10 or 11, 12 in China. Market, supply chains. You know, China, 25% of business is treated or is dealt with there. Germany, 6, and then there are many, many other countries down to 3. So this is a big market, and nobody can dodge this or evade this market. United States, of course, is another, So talking about markets, talking about market access, I should say that this is a long-term process, and, you know, we look at other countries as well as the growth countries, India, for instance, Egypt also. They also have all kinds of mobility projects. Surely we see the potential, but the market is so decisive, so crucial, that at this point we see, and or rather we do not see, a reason why things should change. Then, of course, there are supply chains. There are dependencies which are not, say, healthy, so we have to have a closer look at suppliers, have to have a closer look at supply chains, and then work on improving matters there. You know, if you start changing, modifying supply chains, then, of course, investment in, say, manufacturing facilities in other areas, this is what might be required then. Software, you know, if you do things like this, or if you have to change designs, or, you know, supply frames, or if there are other aspects, you know, you have to handle this, You have to have a closer look at what the supply chains are like now. We are not only preparing things, we are monitoring things, but we are not the only ones. Others are doing the same, and we believe that there is an opportunity or a chance for us in it. Well, Mr. Fleming, thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to talk about the business cycle and this atmosphere, normalization, and giving me the opportunity to give more details on this. You see, in the first quarter, I mentioned that as a result of the necessity to extend delivery times here or there and make sure that deliveries really take place, then, of course, there's a psychological effect. On the one hand, you know, order quantities were increased, hoping that, you know, if I consider myself to be a customer of our suppliers, then surely you are, say, more generous when it comes to stocks or inventories, which you have, just to make sure that you can deliver. And, of course, there's an artifact. Let me call it an artifact. Well, I haven't, you know, you see, it hasn't disappeared right away, but nevertheless, it's much smaller than in the first quarter. Then business cycle, macroeconomy, you touched on this too. Surely we've got the money supply, we've got interest rate policies. There are things which have to be taken into account, and I'm sure over the next, not immediate, but over the next few months, we will certainly see some effects also against the backdrop of any measures and actions taken. You see, all companies in this cost-price situation, they all face it. We have touched on it, but others are affected by it as well. So maybe not right away, but maybe over the next two, three quarters, we will be in a position to see a kind of new normal, new normalities. So cost increases, you know, in our own supply chain, then labor or any other, say, factors which have to be taken into account in order to be successful in your operations, price increases to be passed on to the customers. You know, here we might introduce additional measures. We look at our productivity efforts in this respect. I believe that over the last 2 to 3 quarters, we have reached a very good level. You know, sometimes, and this is what I believe we are really moving towards a new normality. But where this normality is, that's something I do not know. The supply chain situation, you know, China, Shanghai, these are things which might play a role there. But nevertheless, a situation, how about the availability of certain components, you know, for industries. So there's a whole, say, group of things which we see, we try to treat them, to deal with them, and surely this will result in a kind of new normality. There are certain surcharges. We have to take into account additional inventories. Delivery times might be extended, and, you know, backlogs, they will be affected by this. This is what I was talking about. You know, there are some indicators. We've got them across the board. You know, maybe I should have worded it like this, you know, softening some of the extreme effects. But nevertheless, at the end of the day, we haven't reached this, say, situation of the new normal, so that things have, you know, balanced out and we move along normally. Then you also mentioned the administrative costs. Surely they've gone up. Yes. This has to do with the price increases due to the inflation. On the other hand, here we are talking about volume growth, considerable volume growth, and surely these have to be backed up by investment. And this has got nothing, you know, this is not only due to CapEx, F&E, and the headcount. And Roland Busch worded it quite clearly, you know, we are on a growth path and we want to invest in this in a sustainable manner. And this, of course, involves sales teams who have to work on this. And I mentioned it in my contribution as well. You know, we see or we have put on the back burner some of the operations, also looking at cost structures. You can rest assured that I or we are going to focus or pay attention to the cost structures also when looking at the various, say, growth scenarios.
The next question is by William Boston from the Wall Street Journal. Your line is open. Right. Hello. Thank you very much for taking my question. I wanted to get back to the Russia business. Two questions. I think I couldn't find any details in your statement about the size of the business and what that means for Siemens. Maybe I just couldn't find it. That's my first question. The second question is, why now? There are already announcements, there have been announcements in February for companies that withdraw from February. And even in the past, you always try to maintain your business there. Why are you doing it now? And could you put it in the context of change through trade, the German leitmotif? Is that now dead forever? Is it just not going to work and now you're withdrawing that and that's it? Thank you. Well, on the first point, if you're asking about the magnitude of the business size, we have around about 3,000 employees on site. In Russia, revenue is about 1% of Siemens revenue, so that's about 1 billion in revenue. We have a DISI business, a couple of million, I would say. Of course, the largest part is mobility. We have local manufacturing. We also have lots of orders on our books because, of course, we have a long-term service and maintenance business. But, of course, especially in Q2, you see the influence and incoming orders, which amounts to 100 million revenues, 200 million euro. That's sort of the magnitude that we're talking about here. And as I mentioned, the lion's share here is mobility. It's all non-cash effects. So these write-offs of certain assets and values, these 600 million are simply, asset and value write-downs. Now, why now? Well, first of all, let me just say again, immediately after the war was launched, we stopped deliveries to and business in Russia. We also sent people on a paid vacation, basically. So de facto, nothing was really running anymore. Service was continued based on the non-sanctioned parts, also due to the fact that we simply have some contracts ongoing. So you really need to make sure that you don't make any mistakes. But that was at a very low level. Because, of course, if you don't have any brakes or any transmissions or whatever you can build in, then you also can't service these components anymore. And then, of course, there are still laws that you have to stick to. And, by the way, contracts according to international law, so we need to adhere to those. And then based on that, we did an evaluation. We also informed our customers. We took care of our employees, and we're now basically doing an orderly ramp down the way it's supposed to. Because, of course, we also respect the fact that we still have some private customers. We've been in that country for 170 years, but we are consistently ramping down. We support enforcing the sanctions to make sure the sanctions are effective too. And the second question? Well, the second question was if we're going to be gone forever. No, it was all about the German doctrine, change by trade. Do you think that going forward, you won't work anymore with authoritarian states? Do you think that this German Maxine has changed? Right. Okay, thank you. Thank you for reiterating. Now, first of all, I don't think that we should be talking about authoritarian states or autocracies. I think every single country needs to be looked at on an individual basis, and that's why I would warn everyone from doing so. And then the second thing is, that change by trade, changing a system in which you trade with each other is tricky. I still do believe that the worst thing is to not trade with each other, to not talk to each other, because I think a world in which there are no more interdependencies, I think, is a world that is even more unstable and even more difficult. So I still do believe firmly that an open market with trade, with an exchange, is a very good one. And, at the end of the day, I always say the crucial thing is that you show some strength. Strength, of course, is the German market, the European market, but also technologies. Because as long as we have technologies that other nations need in order to maintain their business continuity, in order to keep their economy running, that's, of course, a very strong case to make here. And at the end of the day, where you do have a point, Well, we really have to focus on dependencies, supply chains. Is it primary energy? Is it raw material, you know, rare earths, cobalt, nickel, whatever it may be, so that we can really diversify here and not fall into the trap of a dependency here. So we're working on that. But we do have to say it's a longer journey. You can't do that in just a couple of years. You really need, you know, some stamina. I need to build that up bit by bit. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Next question is by Ika Kofrin from Frankfurt Allgemeine Zeitung. Your line is open. Good morning. I have one question on Russia. I understood it in this way that in the coming weeks and months, you know, no time limit, of course, you will have another low to mid triple-digit million euro amount burdening your earnings. And I just wanted to double-check if I understood that correctly. And, of course, yeah, there is no timeline on this, but are we talking weeks? Are we talking months? Could it also be the case that it would once again translate into the new fiscal year? And a question on China. You elaborated a bit on this, that in Shanghai, you have, I think you called it a closed cycle, that you're working there in another plant. You're once again ramping up production. All in all, do you assume in your forecast that the situation won't deteriorate further? Because so far, at least in Shanghai, it's not really looking like things are going to get better. So maybe you could explain a bit what your take is on this. Thank you. Thank you very much, Ms. Kupin. I'll start with Russia. So we have 572 million post-tax effects that we booked in Q2. Most of them were not cash relevant. That's important. So what is it? Well, it's, of course, new valuations of current assets, liabilities, immaterial assets, and the reduction in revenue from mobility that I mentioned, but also the write-down of book values in equity investments that we also discussed, to name just a few. Outside of that, what's already happened, there are some things that you can really anticipate quite well. So what happens in the next couple of weeks, maybe there could be additional value corrections on liabilities, on receivables, on things that we couldn't sell. Those things we don't know. Those effects are, however, going to be relatively okay. I would say it could be a mid to high double-digit million amount that probably will materialize in this year. But there are also topics that we cannot influence whatsoever. So, for example, if a business is closed, that's going to be deconsolidated. And then, of course, there will be some accounting effects coming to effect here. Then we look at the new equity, and then there will be new effects which might materialize in this low to mid triple-digit million area, but they all have one thing in common. All of those are, by and large, not going to be cash-relevant effects, and that's why we are as transparent as possible. However, we cannot give you a seeming estimate or a seeming accurate estimate in terms of, you know, the timing or what we believe which sanctions might happen. We're dealing with the sanctions and the framework that we have, and we're trying to do so as well as possible. Now, what's important for us is that we are as transparent as possible and that we actually differentiate between accounting effects that actually have an effect on our earnings and those that impact our cash flow. So I do believe it's very important to underline those differences very clearly, time and time again. Right, and then to the China question. First of all, what we see on site is the following thing. We have some manufacturing in Shanghai, and also those that really have big volume are for SI are in Nanjing or Beijing. They're not affected. Those in Shanghai are. Sometimes there's also supplies from Shanghai to other manufacturing sites, and that's what you see impacted at the moment. We see the lockdown being eased, so those that work at the closed loops is what I called it. You know, is we can actually send employees to a site. They live there, and with that, you can actually ramp up a production, at least partially. Some productions are back to 50% that were previously completely closed, and that's actually going up step by step. Of course, we're also getting extraordinary permits because we deliver industry-relevant products This is, by the way, also for the suppliers, right? So it doesn't mean if I ramped up my manufacturing business again and then the supplier, you know, doesn't deliver. That's, of course, still an issue. And so we're talking about this. And, of course, the hope is that the outlook that we have is that mid-May, this manufacturing will ramp up again so that we are back at a normal level. But then what you also see is sort of this downstream effect as well, right? There's a lot of ships, for example, that are being kept in the harbor waiting to be unloaded. So there are some speed bumps. So we're waiting for this to be resolved in May. This is what we've planned in, and we're hoping to get back into a relatively normal mode. Of course, we haven't planned that lots of large cities will go in a full week-long lockdown again. We don't see that happening at the moment. I know there are discussions about Beijing currently. It's quite possible that it might be smaller, more selective lockdowns, but that's just speculation at this point. So we've done what we can anticipate. Today we've reacted to that. Shanghai is leaving the lockdown, exiting the lockdown again, and other cities that we are currently manufacturing in that we are being supplied from, they're just going to continue the way that we've planned it at the moment. And everything else, you know, we're just going to play it by ear, and that's all we can do at this point. Right. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, dear colleagues, for all of your questions. If there are any unanswered questions, then we are very sorry that we couldn't answer them in this open call. Please do contact us, however, in our press department. We thank you very much for all your time and interest. And just around the corner at 9:30 CET, we will have our analyst call with Roland Busch and Ralph Thomas. And, of course, you can also follow this analyst call live at Siemens.com/analyst call. And you will hear from us again at August 11th at the very latest for our Q3 earnings release of fiscal 2022. Thank you very much from all of us, and have a great day. Goodbye.